When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Rewind to Raw. I'm John Pollock, along with Wei Ting. Hello, Wei.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. Good. All rested up from the trip?
Yeah, pretty much. I was fine, to be quite honest. It was, how about you?
Oh, I'm not doing so hot. I was tired all day. You know, I just felt like I had to try to catch up all day, so. But I'm good now. You know, usually when the red light's on, I can perk back up.
You're a pro.
I try to, yeah.
Yeah, I woke up this morning. I had to take my son to the doctor's office, so that was right back into it. It's disease season, is what it appears to be.
Oh, yeah. A lot's going around, and I'm hoping like, you know, I try to stay away, but you know, who knows? Is he okay?
It's fine. It was just a little. He had a bit of a cough last week, and then it turned into, it's not an ear infection. It's just, just had a pain in his ear. So anyway, gotta take care of all these things. I also got my flu shot today. This was just, it was an exciting day back in Toronto, from the doctor's office to the flu shot. I made an appointment to go get my flu shot at the local grocery store over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I go there thinking I can go get my shot. I'm out of there. I sign in. They're like, okay, your appointment is 2:10. Yep, I'm here 5 minutes early. Dude, 30 minutes. I just stand there waiting. And then finally, they give me my flu shot. And then they say, well, please stay in the store for 15 minutes. I like laughed. I was like, okay, sure. I walked right out. It's like.
I mean, it's really for your own benefit, you know. To
be quite honest, sure, okay. Dude, if I passed out by the produce section, they wouldn't even know. Okay. It was like, hopefully someone would notice down the aisle. I think it'd be too late. So anyway,
I do not recommend leaving right after your shot.
Okay. Don't do it. But I had to get going. Okay. I was not spending an hour in this grocery store to get what would have looked 30 seconds to get a flu shot. I recommend the flu shot. Everyone get it. Unless you don't, I don't know. Is there like flu shots that people don't want? I don't know. I don't care. Anyway, how was your weekend? What'd you get up to?
I was down in Newark.
Me
for
too.
AEW Full Gear. Oh, you don't say. Yes. I believe I was on the same flight as you. I was there for, of course, AEW Full Gear and also Post Wrestling's 5-year anniversary show at QXT's Nightclub, which I feel
248 Mulberry Street, just minutes away from the Prudential Center, the site of Full Gear.
I think that was the last time I'll ever say QXT's Nightclub. That was the last time.
I will never in my life forget that address, okay? On my deathbed, okay? As I'm in the produce section, I will remember where QXT's Nightclub is located.
It was a great time. I had an awesome, awesome time. Really, I think, could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to gather so many people that we have met and have worked with, you know, through pro wrestling, all in the same spot, you know, from all over the world.
Yeah, it was that was super cool on the Friday where we had a seamless flight to Newark and then getting out of that airport. What a disaster. What a disaster. And really not a reflection of the airport as it was our shuttle system to try and get out of there. That was just, it was like we were making solid time. We were maybe going to have a little buffer before we had to get into New York. That was quickly evaporated. But I mean, small delay in the grand scheme of things.
I would not recommend booking your flight for a Friday afternoon and trying to get from Newark to Manhattan during rush hour traffic on a Friday. Probably, you know, bad call on our part. But
though your strategy of us ordering from our hour-long Uber and then arriving at the restaurant within minutes our meal arrived, I mean, it couldn't have been timed out more perfectly.
That did work out better in our favor. But we met everybody on a Friday in Times Square at Pasta Lovers. Shout out Pasta Lovers, Times Square.
Posta Lovers.
Posta Lovers. That's right. Yeah. And it was a great time. We saw a lot of people, met Andrew Thompson for the first time. We met for the first time.
Yeah. I was, it's so weird. You feel like you've met these people, but technically had not met Stephanie Chase for the first time, met WH Park for the first time. I mean, it was just a great time.
Yeah. Shout out the Pasta Lovers. All of us will always have pasta, in our history. I'm trying to get the photo up on screen here, but, there you go. There you go, everybody.
The professor.
Look at this.
The professor arrived. That's right. Jordan Goodman, Davey Portman, who was battling Earth that day and was a true champion all weekend, really. Everybody was. Scrump there. That's Braden, who it looks like his eyes are closed. Very apropos. Mike Murray in the back.
John Cena, Stephanie Chase was there. Of course,
Queen Nora of the C Vivian, block. The purveyors of the C block. I don't know if it's a shared queendom, but at least one of them lays claim permanently. Mike Murray, So it was great. It was just such a fun weekend. Like I don't have too much more to describe beyond. I just had such a fantastic weekend seeing so many people and being down there. Just getting back to covering an event in person was a lot of very enjoyable for me as well. And as much as I was looking at Saturday as being like I figured like this is going to be a really taxing day by the end of it, I really didn't feel it by the end. Like I was in pretty good shape by the time we finished that post show on Saturday night, and I thought our show would be terrible Saturday night. I actually listened back. I was like, I thought we had a lot of energy for starting at roughly 2 a.m. on Sunday morning, technically. I guess you and I have been preparing for working on little sleep. I think we've prepared in different ways.
Even if given the opportunity to sleep in, I don't know if I'm able to anymore. You know, I just kind of
bought. I couldn't. I woke up at 8 on my own the next morning. I got like 4 hours of sleep and I was good. I wandered around.
It's fine. I mean, we're probably going to chip away a few years from the end of our lives, but for now, it's worth it.
So thanks to everyone that showed up at the anniversary show on Saturday. We got to meet so many of you as well. Mm-hmm. And it was a great turnout, fun vibe. We got some great questions, and of course the real digital team that spearheaded this whole idea and just presented it to us. Way, and I was like, all right, we're down. Sounds great.
Yeah. Shout out to Real Digital and Robert Pearson, of course, for stellar, incredible production. And the recording we're going to release at some point on the Patreon. So just look out for that. Won't be this week. We're probably going to have to, get it back and do some put some final touches on it at least. But you guys will know all about it.
So that will be coming up for Cafe members. So you can look forward to that in the coming weeks or so as mm-hmm. well. Also this week, we're going to have the return of Rewind Away on Tuesday night. We're going back to December 11th, 2002, NWA TNA at the Asylum. And that is what I watched today. What a show this is that we are going to be reviewing. Headlined by Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Hennig for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. A very, very young AJ Styles against an even younger Amazing Red. We are also going to talk about the first, and to my knowledge only, chair and chain match between R-Truth, Ron Killings, and BG James. Probably you will find out why it was not a gimmick that was ever repeated.
Sorry, what was that again?
A chair and chain match, Way, because somebody...
Chair and chain.
You know, when you have a chain match and you chain your opponent to each of their wrists, they're tied together with a chain... You've seen matches like that. What if you fed a chair onto the chain? So in the middle of the chain, there was a chair dangling in the middle. Wouldn't that be so much cooler than a chain match?
I'm surprised they went with TLC and didn't just change it to chairs and chains.
Pay-per-view. I mean, It would have just been a different outcome for Edge, Christian, the Hardys, and the Dudleys if that was their claim to fame. So we are going to go through all of this. A very controversial promo from Roddy Piper the week before that we get Jeff Jarrett's reaction to. And this is it. It's the Asylum days. OK, Wednesday night pay-per-views. There is a chance I might have bought this pay-per-view 20 years ago. I don't know. But look forward to it. Way will be taking in all the goodness of Mortimer Plumtree in the next 24 hours. So that's what you have to look forward to, Way.
That is probably my viewing after we're done this show here. So great.
And then later on this week, Wednesday night, it's going to be Wei Ting and Bruce Lord on Rewind to Dynamite. I have a prior commitment. I am on dad duty all Wednesday night, and I do not think I will be able to start Dynamite and do the show. So in my place will be a more than capable stand-in in Bruce Lord. So I look forward to hearing Bruce and Wei on Wednesday night. But then back on Friday with Wei, we will chat SmackDown and Rampage going into the weekend. And then we're live Saturday night with a Survivor Series post-show. Remember, Saturday night, if John Moxley is listening, it's on Saturday night this weekend from Boston. We will be live minutes after the PLE. YouTube.com/postwrestling. Subscribe to the channel. Leave us a thumbs up. And that is all that is coming up this week among the many regular shows we have. Up next, we'll be live on Tuesday night chatting about their big announcement from Saturday's show, and I'm sure discussing their trip, as they were there a lot longer than us. They were there almost the entire week, and now they are still not home. So more to come from them on Tuesday night.
They went to New York, and you know what? I think they might have lost their name. I don't think it's Meechin either. So if you want to find out what's coming up in the very near future for our friends at Up Next, listen this Tuesday. I'm sure it'll be an important episode.
Well, and if you find out where they're broadcasting from, in what particular building, it is Meechin.
So Meechin, yeah.
So all of the shows can be found. Postwrestling.com, the schedule is up there, and all of the great news items. Big thank you to Neil Flanagan for holding down the fort over the weekend.
Thank you, Neil, for... Neil, I feel really bad for, because he was supposed to be with us in Newark, and for whatever logistical reason,
Andrew Thompson called the consulate and
barred him. Border issues that are all the more complicated these days, I'm sure, unfortunately got the best of Neil, so he was unable to make it. I believe he made it to the airport before he had to find out. But, you know, what are you going to do if you can't, take a vacation? You decide, you do some work at postwrestling.com. And he did a great job over the weekend.
Yeah. A big thank you to Neil and Eric Marcotte, who covered the pay-per-view on the site on Saturday night, and Andrew Thompson, who has been busy all day long and was in New Jersey as well over the weekend. So a big thank you to all of the post team that made it out over the weekend, and we're holding things down on the site as well. The worldwide network of post wrestling at work. So let's get into a bunch of news items to go over from the last couple of days. Off the top, I just want to mention two passings. The first one, Bob Mulrennan, who was a very well-known photographer for just pretty much all of these promotions going back decades. There's a really nice story on him on the Slam Wrestling site if you'd like to read more. He was very tied in with many different groups, in particular Impact Wrestling, who had made a post about his passing over the weekend. Worked with Paul Heyman. I mean, lots of people. He had a lot of contacts in the industry. Very popular individual. Someone that I did not know, but a regular at so many different fan conventions. An unfortunate loss. He got sick earlier this year. Had kept it very quiet, and unfortunately, passing away as a result of that. So lots of condolences that were made over the weekend. And the other one is one that got a lot of widespread attention, but certainly had his connections in MMA, and that was Jason David Frank, who people would know from Power Rangers. And here was a guy, sadly took his life over the weekend, was only 49 years old, but this was a guy that practiced martial arts throughout most of his life, and then got involved in MMA and launched what was like a fairly notable clothing line during like the height of, I would say, MMA fashion, with this clothing line called Jesus Doesn't Tap, which I always thought was like really clever. I'm sure it upset some people out there, but as someone that was raised Catholic, I thought it was like a great tagline to grab attention for oneself. Obviously, that is not what he is primarily known for. But someone other times he did some film work with John Hennigan. I was reading about as well. But of course, many people remember him as Tommy Oliver, the Green Ranger, who later became the White Ranger, a very epic multi-episodic series that led to the creation of the White Ranger. And if there was a story arc that pulled me into Power Rangers, that was Itway, through my cousins.
Oh, it really was.
They got a box set of the VHSs with all the episodes that led to the creation of the White Ranger. And I was just fascinated by this storyline on Power Rangers because I wasn't really big into that series until I saw that particular storyline.
Mm. I mean, I was all about it. You know, I'm almost a little bit surprised at how much press, you know, his passing has received. And I think a lot of it is because so many people of our generation remember that series so fondly. You know, the Dragon Sword flute tune, is we can all, you know, hum it if we were asked to. Has had a lot of connections to MMA, of course. I think one
he had several fights as well. Like, he was, I looked this up, he was 4-0 as an amateur, and then he won a pro fight in 2010. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was like tongue in cheek, but like people were like throwing out his name when CM Punk was getting involved. It's like, it was like he would have the credentials, like if you were going to go that route. But nonetheless, it was like, this was a guy that like, he was very involved in like martial arts and mixed martial arts for a very long time. And a lot of MMA personalities commenting on his passing and who he had been involved with.
Mm.
So anyway, rest in peace. You know, he had 4 children. It's a really tragic story involving Jason David Frank. Over the weekend, in addition to Full Gear, there was also a New Japan and Stardom's historic crossover event that took place in Tokyo at the Araki Arena with an announced attendance of 7,102, which for either group is a very good number in 2022 post-pandemic pro wrestling in the country. Did you get to see any of the show, Wei?
I did. I saw the Tom Lawler Shuri match where they're teaming against Julia and Zack Sabre Jr. and also the main event.
Yeah, I saw like the last 6 matches, and we won't do like an extensive run through here, but just some of the highlights. Zack Sabre Jr. and Julia taking on Shuri and Tom Lawler. Of course, Shuri and Tom Lawler having the both competing in the UFC, and of course, Zack Sabre Jr. and Julia from the UK with their lineage as well. And this was one where this was a match that Tom Lawler was very much looking forward to. And I thought just the combinations in this were so fun to watch. And the Zach and Lawler exchanges were just top level here. And it ended with a European clutch that was countered to a rear naked choke, and then Zach flipping over, reversing Lawler back to the European clutch and catching him in 10 minutes and 52 seconds. But these two together were, I thought, terrific.
I thought so too. Absolutely. I mean, it really became a great preview for Julia versus Shuri that's coming up at Dream Queendom, I believe.
Yes.
And then I thought, like, overall, the match itself and the show itself for me was a wonderful sort of like introduction to some of the bigger names in Stardom and some of the current storylines in Stardom. But I was also incredibly impressed at how much Tom Lawler's charisma shone through in this sort of setting. He, you know, his enthusiasm, I think, was completely infectious. You could tell that this
he had the God's Eye logo on his jean trunks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought he did absolutely great, and clearly it was a real thrill for him. Even the post-match promos, especially like in some of these cases where, you know, I don't know how much like not in this case, because I know Shuri probably speaks at least a little bit of English, but there are some of them where like I don't even know if like they really understand what the other person says. But everything sounds so natural, and I really like their post-match promo as well.
Then you had Natsupoi, Tam Nakano, Taichi, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru defeating Doki, El Desperado, Momo Watanabe, and Starlight Kid. This got very heated. Desperado and Natsupoi, they had like this ongoing story in the mixed matches of that the rules had been set that it was only the males would take on the males, the females would take on the females. And in almost every match, it was almost like this statement that they would do, like, intergender spots and being like the women feel like they are being like protected here or something, and they went out of their way to have like spots between the men and the women in several of the matches. But Tam went for the incredible dream, couldn't hold on to it because she had been selling the arm. And then Momo Watanabe got the bat, but ends up taking the mist from Natsupoi. Taichi takes the pants off. There's super kicks by Taichi and Nakano. And then the Black Mephisto by Taichi pins Doki in 12 minutes. But this was a really fun match for the time that they had. And the crowd was into it quite a bit. Hiroshi Tanahashi and Utami Hayashita against Hiroki Goto and Micah. They went 9.5 minutes. Utami ended up pinning Micah after hitting the hijack bomb. I would say this one was a little bit below what I kind of anticipated when you looked at the people involved in this. Like, it was fine, but I wouldn't say it was one of the standout matches of the six that I saw. I mean, serviceable, but not in not at the end of the show that I think you were looking at this as one that over-delivered. Then we had Kazuchika Okada, Tori Yano, and Great Muta. In Muta, as they were promoting this, his last match in a New Japan ring, as this would be classified as, against Aaron Hanare, Jeff Cobb, and Great Okan. And we did get the Okan missing with the mist as he hit Cobb with the mist. So then Muta hit Great Okan, but not with the green mist. With the red mist, and they noted how bad this is. The red mist from Muta. So maybe Great Okan is going to have some kind of blindness coming out of this, or some kind of change to his character after hitting this. So that led to the closing sequence of Okada drop kicking Hanare, Muta with the Shining Wizard, and then Okada hits the Rainmaker to pin Hanare. So not giving Muta the pin. He got to do his mist and his Shining Wizard, and that's where New Japan put their foot down. That's what you get, Muta. So on his farewell tour, this is one of his... this is a countdown way. We have several more final farewell matches to go before February.
Sure.
Look at this three-man unit. I mean, are these guys coming for the trios belts or what in AEW?
You know, Death Triangle, watch out.
Then we had Will Ospreay against Shota Umino for the IWGP United States Championship. And I actually saw this because you had retweeted it, Wade. Did you want to explain Ospreay's outfit for... This match?
Yeah, he came out dressed as Hayabusa. Mm-hmm. And actually had...
I think everyone just thought it was just, oh, he's just doing a tribute for Hayabusa, and there was like quite the story behind it.
Yeah, he actually, you know, mentioned that he asked Hayabusa's daughter for her blessing and took her out to lunch. And I believe is they're helping auction the outfit for charity or for some sort of cause. A wonderful story from a very influential wrestler for any sort of high flyer. And you can obviously see it, you know, in so many people's wrestling style. Seth Rollins, of course, you know, a guy who takes many of his moves. And Will Ospreay, you would assume. I guess you would assume that like every high flyer is influenced, but I guess like Ospreay in particular, I don't know if I've ever heard him speak about Hayabusa that much, but clearly a man who had huge impact on his style.
And you would probably assume he voted for Hayabusa in the Hall of Fame this year.
If he has a vote, do wrestlers get votes?
Yeah,
I guess every reader does.
Active wrestler. No, not readers. It's the ballots are sent out selectively.
Oh, okay.
But active wrestlers do. So if he does get a ballot, I would think he would be on Ospreay's. Well, it would depend on the numbers. I mean, it is a higher amount.
You vote for yourself?
You can vote for yourself. Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing stopping you from voting for yourself. I mean, that's how a regular election works.
True.
You can vote for yourself. So there was an interesting dynamic here because this is Shota Umino challenging for the U.S. title. This is a rematch from Royal Quest. And Red Shoes Umino is the referee. Red Shoes Uno. He's like his father is the referee here.
Now there's a conflict of interest right there.
Well, that's what they were bringing up here. And it was like, it really didn't play that much into parts of the match, but it was kind of like an odd decision when you're not doing like some big, but I mean, the announcers are trying to explain that, you know, he's being a bit more emotional here because it's his son and, you know, Will Ospreay is being very brutal in the match. So, I mean, it was kind of an interesting addition. But this would never fly in a real sport. I don't think like this couldn't happen in MMA, could it?
I would suggest like, you know, the opponent would probably raise a bit of a, I don't know, issue with it. But I mean, for wrestling, it's great storytelling.
So you had playing off of Royal Quest, you had Ospreay delivering the strikes to the back of the head, but Umino survived. He ducked a hidden blade and landed a big pump up knee strike. Osprey then countered a Death Rider. Stormbreaker is blocked, and we're just getting into all of the intense finishing sequences here. Elevated Death Rider, and then the follow-up gets blocked, and Osprey hits the hidden blade to the front, and then one from behind for the Stormbreaker. And then I looked down at my time. I was like, this can't be right. There's no way this match was this long. But it was, in fact, 22 minutes and 55 seconds. I'm not kidding. I thought it was like 12 minutes or something. It felt like I couldn't believe that much time elapsed that I watched this, but it was a really, really enjoyable match. I wouldn't say it was like Ospreay's like upper echelon of matches this year, but that still is a lot of praise for the match. I would say this was probably Umino's best single showing overall, and a tough position because I don't think anyone bought Umino winning this, but Ospreay continues to elevate this U.S. title, and I think we are now gearing up for what is going to be the biggest match for that title, because as the United Empire is hoisting Will up in the air and Gideon Gray is proclaiming him the best, the lights go out. And then on the screen is Kenny Omega, who just cut the best promo in Japanese. I don't want to hear heel Kenny Omega ever speak English after this promo. This was the best. I watched this thing on Sunday morning, and I must have watched it like three more times during the day, of Kenny Omega stating that Will Ospreay was supposed to be his successor because once AEW formed, Kenny Omega didn't need New Japan. And what has Will done? The crowds have gone down. There's no cheering. What's the line you're using, Will? It's because of the pandemic. Well, Will, the only virus here is you. Then takes a shot at him and his auto-translate pals, the United Empire. And he took the call from New Japan. And he didn't want to do it, but he couldn't give up this opportunity to come back for one night. And that is our match for the Tokyo Dome on January 4th. And I think that Chris Charlton summed it up best, that this feels like the main event for January 4th. I think this is going to overshadow Jay White and Kazuchika Okada. And I think this makes Wrestle Kingdom feel like a big deal now.
It makes it feel like Wrestle Kingdom again. You know, for me, you know, much of my disconnect with New Japan has been sort of like the stale roster. And it's sort of this sort of like special attraction outside, participation that I feel like the promotion's really been lacking, especially for Wrestle Kingdom. And, you know, Japan has probably been the toughest place in the world to try to book a show like a Wrestle Kingdom to its standard. But clearly things are kind of lifting right now. And, you know, as soon as they announced that best of seven with the Elite and Death Triangle, we saw that missing spot for January 4th where there won't be one of those matches. And I think we already began speculation about, in particular, Kenny Omega's participation. We got the announcement pretty much, you know, less than 24 hours later. It's a huge match. It's a match that might reinvigorate a lot of interest in New Japan Pro Wrestling if the rest of the card is strong. They made comparisons to Alpha versus Omega. I certainly feel like this has the potential of being that sort of big crossover match that might drag a lot of lapsed New Japan fans back in.
This is a very important match for New Japan to push for travelers, for New Japan World, and just domestically to sell tickets at the Tokyo Dome. Like, I feel if Wrestle Kingdom is a big success this year, this is the match that deserves, rightfully so, the credit. It does feel like the main event now. And, you know, between those two matches, like, it does feel like a big show, as you mentioned once again. So it's great that they could pull it off.
Yeah. You know, we're at this point, we're kind of talking about the addition of new names, of mainstream names. And Kenny's not the only one that was added to the show.
That's right. We will get to that. The main event was Kairi and Mayu Iwatani to determine the IWGP Women's Champion, the first champion as the tournament winds down. And Kairi ended up working this match with like a pretty severe sprained ankle that she posted a photo of afterwards. And I saw that photo first and then watched this match. And it was like, goddamn, you could not tell. And what she was doing, it was like she's doing missile drop kicks and stuff. And when you see this ankle, like, this looked insane that she worked through this match with this kind of an injury.
She also wrestled to a 30-minute draw the night prior.
This is insane. It was absolutely insane. They went 25 and a half minutes here. And just some of the highlights here. You had Mayu with a top rope, Hurricane Rana, and then goes back up, landing a splash. Kairi hit the high cross to the floor on the sprained ankle. And then we have a series of spinning back fists as Mayu just staggers on her feet and won't go down. Mayu finally then lands her shot and hits a tombstone and a dragon suplex, just dumping her on her head. Kairi hits an elbow off the second turnbuckle, hits the insane elbow for a two count, and then a crucifix bomb by Mayu, dragon suplex for a two count, and finally it is Kairi with the big comeback and a final insane elbow in 25-32. Take the championship, and we'll face Tam Nakano on January 4th on the show proper, which will be the first time we've got a women's match on the actual show of Wrestle Kingdom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think Kairi really is probably your perfect choice, you know, for one of these, like essentially this IWGP Women's Championship. It kind of tells me that like she's sort of the transition unofficially between, you know, Stardom and New Japan Pro Wrestling. It's a championship that I would assume would be defended in some of those New Japan US shows, and has a role on a show like a Wrestle Kingdom. She is by far the biggest name in that company right now. And even within a New Japan roster, I would probably consider Kairi to be one of the bigger crossover names. So I think her addition to Wrestle Kingdom, to me, adds a lot of excitement for Wrestle Kingdom. It's a huge match for Tam Nakano. Probably, I mean, by far, obviously, the biggest stage that she'll be able to wrestle on. From the little promo I thought she cut in the ring, the confidence was full on. So I'm very excited to see her, how she does on such a big stage.
Yeah, and as Wei mentioned, it's Shuri and Julia, December 29th. That's the Sumo Hall Dream, Stardom's Dream Queendom show that will also have Kairi against Utami on that show as well. Mm-hmm. So some very big shows in a small amount of time, because sandwiched in between that show and January 4th is the Muda Nakamura match on January 1st. So there's going to be a lot of eyes on various Japanese products over, I would say, that month, because you extend it to Sting and Muda teaming up. Like there's quite a lot going on in Japan over the next couple of months. So I haven't seen the entire show, but what I saw, it was a very enjoyable show. They drew a very good crowd, and I would think that it's a concept that they will continue. It's, you know, you've created this title, and I think there's other combinations to be had, but I really enjoyed the Zach and Tom Lawler stuff. There's a lot more that those two can draw from.
The pairings are just fun, and to me it's kind of surprising that it's taken this long for Bushiroad to be able to do something like this. I don't know what sort of red tape prevented them from doing this earlier, but it's a long time coming, and honestly, like it's probably the most excited I've been for a New Japan Pro Wrestling thing in quite some time. So I would say more than Stardom needing, well, Stardom certainly needs New Japan and their exposure, but I think New Japan needs Stardom too.
Next story up is an interesting one, to say the least. This was first reported by Mark Ramondi that Cain Velasquez, who we have been documenting throughout the year, he is out on bail, and he is making a request that while out on bail, he can wrestle for AAA on December 3rd on their show in Tempe, Arizona, which is where he wrestled at in university for Arizona State. This is the show that AAA is running, and at last check from WrestleTix, not a show that has been selling well. Like under 500 tickets are out for this show, but Kane wants to wrestle, and a ruling is going to be made of whether he can do this or not on Tuesday. So we will know if AAA can use Cain Velasquez, which is an odd addition to this show.
Yeah,
potentially.
Yeah, to have a special attraction be somebody who's currently out on bail for
attempted murder
is definitely a choice. It's going to raise sort of that issue of, like, you know, where you stand on the on where Cain Velasquez's actions are. Of course, we all know the story by now. It's a very emotional one that a lot of people are going to.
There's a lot of sympathy for Cain Velasquez in this situation. It's I would say overwhelming. I would say like the public support. At the same time, like there is, you know, this is a you know, it's one that is going to draw a lot of attention to this, and I don't think AAA is going to mind that.
Yeah, just the idea of, like, you know, somebody that's like just out of jail and in possibly between jail stints, being able to entertain and perform and possibly be celebrated in the ring. I don't feel comfortable, you know, with that. But I mean, shit, it's, I guess they're quite desperate for a big name act, and maybe, you know, from Kane's perspective, legally, if he's able to be granted this, then why wouldn't he ask, I guess?
Yeah, I guess it's just, it's just an odd thing that you would, like, with all that's going on in his personal life, that this would even be something crossing your mind. But obviously it is enough that he is going through the protocol.
You got to make money, especially like with what he's facing.
Yeah. Right? So anyway, we'll know on Tuesday. It's either going to be a yes or a no. I don't know how, they will grant or not grant this request, and what is going to go into this thinking for them. But that's a story I did not expect to see today, but that is what is going on. A few other quick things here. So WWE has apparently made a verbal commitment to a group in Nashville that is leading the cause for a new enclosed stadium to be built. This is in Nashville, Tennessee, and it would be the home of the Tennessee Titans. And WWE has apparently given a verbal agreement that if this stadium gets built, they will bring WrestleMania to the stadium in 2027, which would be WrestleMania 43. Ready for WrestleMania 43? Way?
Am I ready to be 43 myself? Jesus, yeah. No, not at all, but okay.
So this was reported by the Tennessean newspaper, and WWE did give a statement noting, Nashville has exploded as a cultural center in the United States and as the land of opportunity. WWE looks forward to hosting many events in partnership with the great city of Nashville at the proposed enclosed stadium. So that is, if the stadium gets built, you know, Nashville, they had a very successful event there over the summer at Nissan Stadium for SummerSlam. And we do know at least the next two sites of WrestleMania through 2024, 25 and 26. There are not any cities that have been linked yet to those events. So this is how far out they are forecasting a potential WrestleMania in Nashville.
Well, listen, the fact that it's being proposed in this particular city tells me that I think we've got Jeff Jarrett's next major appearance lined up already, you know, five years down the road. Is he already in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, he is. But he could go in again.
Sure. Why not? Yeah.
He'll go in with the Bullet Club.
He'll go in with the Bullet Club. Maybe he'll go in as part of this faction with Jay Lethal and Sutton, I'm saying somehow. Okay. Somehow he'll justify that.
Yeah, maybe maybe they'll induct Immortal into the Hall of Fame. Here. Sure. WWE has announced that the Royal Rumble has now surpassed a $5 million gate for January 28th at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas. So this will be the largest Rumble gate in the history of the event. Last report from WrestleTix has over 30,000 tickets out for the show. So this has been a giant success thus far for the company coming up in January. Being the Elite returned on Monday, Way. Did you watch today's episode?
I did watch it, yes.
Well, there was a lot to take from this episode, and in particular, Matt and Nick Jackson, they spoke to Brandon Cutler, who is shooting this, and Matt stating that this has been two of the hardest months of their lives. They weren't able to talk about what went down. Both had a lot of anxiety about performing in advance of full gear. Matt even saying he was waking up in like cold sweats, worried about, you know, 2 months of not wrestling and just being nervous, but said the full gear felt great. This was done the day after. This was done, I guess, Sunday morning, and said that full gear felt great and gave some backstory on the Kansas song, that it's a song that they used to listen to with their dad and would come out in their backyard fed to, and only got clearance for it, they said, at the 11th hour. So it was obviously a late decision that they were going to get the clearance for it, but there is, I guess, some history, and I just picture Papa Buck rocking out with young Matt and Nick to Kansas.
I think we need the Papa Buck version. of Carry On, My Wayward Son. Absolutely.
Well, yeah. They're returning to California next year, and there's always that chance. Maybe a live tribute to Kansas.
Oh, you know what? Whatever karaoke they're doing, it's going to be there. So is it coming back for them? Is it staying with them?
So Tony Khan had stated at the press conference that it was likely they would use it again, and I guess we'll find out that answer on Wednesday. I would imagine they're coming out to it again, I would think, given that, you know, if they weren't, I think Tony Khan would have just said no. So, But the most noteworthy portion was their recap of the match with Death Triangle. And as they're making their entrance, we do not hear Kansas on this YouTube version. Instead, a song is plastered over this called Statement by NEFX. Are you familiar with NEFX?
I'm not, John, no.
Well, I did get familiar with them this afternoon as I dug into this song, which was used over top the footage of the trio's championship match. And first of all, they isolate the fuck CM Punk chants very clearly for everybody to hear that is watching Being the Elite. And then this song plays, which includes the lyrics, "I don't ever slow up. No, I don't take shit. I got no love for the fakeness. If you want to play tough and want to hate this, I'll always show up and make a statement. And the pettiness, a reflection of the emptiness. Hilarious. You think you're worth my time. You're delirious. Mysterious, because you hide behind a fake exterior. Inferior, you know I'll always be a bit superior. Get off of me. This ain't no humble brag. I want you to hear words. You can say them back. I want you to feel free from the chains at last. And to believe in what you got, it was built to last." Yeah.
Oh, my. Okay. I don't think they would have looked that deep into the lyrics of this replacement song that they used on a YouTube video, right? Just to avoid a copyright.
These guys, not looking too deep into things.
I mean, I don't know.
I was very surprised that they isolated the fuck CM Punk chants.
Well, it was a notable part of the entrance. But yeah, you mean from a legal perspective?
Just being so blatant about it in this video. I mean, these are still three EVPs as well.
Right.
And you know, this was very much their statement on the matter. I think this spoke volumes about their feelings, which are probably not surprising to people. I was just this was their way of addressing the elephant in the room, and I think you got that out of their system in this video.
Perhaps.
So there you have it. That was Being the Elite. And then a final thing here, and then I promise we'll get to the Raw review. Quick notes from the ratings from Friday. SmackDown doing almost an identical number from last week. 2,232,000 viewers, a 0.56 in 18 to 49. Number one on television for the evening, and second among all network programs in 18 to 34 behind a program on Telemundo. But both SmackDown and Rampage had big spikes in female viewership. It was interesting to see. For the example of SmackDown, their female 18 to 49 audience was up 10%, and it was, you know, their highest in several weeks. Their male audience was either equal or down from the week prior. But overall, like, again, it was. You know, standard SmackDown number, which translates to a very good number when it's number one on television. But their female 18 to 49 number was their highest since the night of Vince McMahon's resignation. So you're going back several months that female viewership in the key demo was that high. And it was more pronounced on Rampage, which did 445,000 viewers, 16th on cable, and a 0.14 in 18 to 49. So viewership was actually down from last week, but the demo was up 22%. It's still, you know, in the current area of Rampage, this is somewhat in the middle of it all. I mean, not a drastic variation from last week, but female viewership across the board was up dramatically from last week. In women 18 to 49, it was up 76% from last week, their highest since Grand Slam in September, and second highest in that demo since April. For 18 to 34, women were up 80% from last week, but that was more so last week was really down. And then women 35 to 49 was up 71%. And this was not reflected in men. Men, it was either small decrease or small increase. There was not a whole lot of movement there. So obviously, they have found that the key to their female viewership is Jun Akiyama. I think this has been what has been uncovered from Friday's numbers. But both shows did like well with women on Friday night. And granted, this is one night. You can't really dig too deep into it unless it's a pattern of some sort. But that was my takeaway from Friday's numbers.
Was there any explanation through the competition?
I mean, there was they were going against the NBA. I mean, that was the top thing on cable. Like, it wasn't as though there was anything out of the blue that they were going against. Rampage was third in its time slot behind the NBA game and On Patrol Live. So, it wasn't like anything that jumped out at me as to a reason why. But something worth noting. Maybe if it plummets and Jun Akiyama's not back, then I think that there's your answer right there to just settle. And the countdown show that aired right after Rampage, it did 234,000 viewers and a 0.06, 85th for the night on cable. And our final thing, I know you wanted to know about this way, Young Rock, 1,360,000 viewers. So it fell in viewership, but they were up this week in the demo, up 22%. And beat two shows in 18 to 34, still last in viewership and 18 to 49 among the big four networks. So that's the latest on Young Rock.
So good.
I didn't see Friday's show. So I don't know what we're up to at this point. They're going at a rapid pace through the Attitude Era right now. That's what they're up to. All your news can be found at postwrestling.com. And we now shift focus to the MVP Arena in Albany, New York. Not often that you're in an arena named after one of your stars.
You figure he would have had a bigger role on the show.
On main event, they had Elba Fire beating Tamina and Akira Tozawa over Grayson Waller. And it was noted and later seen on Raw, Akira Tozawa appears to have graduated out of the ninja outfit.
Yeah, he's got a blonde look now. And you know, I'm very happy he's no longer a ninja.
It's wonderful news. Did you hear about Monday Night Football tonight?
No,
it was the 49ers against the Arizona Cardinals, and George Kittle, who's on the 49ers, he's a big wrestling fan. Pentagon Jr. is at the sidelines and George Kittle goes up to him and they put a mask on him. And Joe Buck is calling the game and acknowledging Pentagon Jr. And this was on the ESPN game tonight. So
that's incredible press.
Yeah. Quite Pentagon. The weekend for Pentagon Jr. I was waiting for Joe Buck to weigh in on who he thinks is going to take the match number two this Wednesday.
Maybe you could have given him a bell hammer to use in the game.
That would have been a great tie in there. Hand that to George Kittle. You need the hammer. Raw. This is my takeaway. Okay. The third hour was incredibly long for me. It was just two extremely long matches. Number two, I don't ever need to hear War Pigs by Black Sabbath again. I am ready. All 5 days out. I don't need to hear this song again. I think they played it 50 times on tonight's Raw.
I mean, they pay a lot of money for these songs, and I suppose they like to get their money's worth.
They are. They're getting it and then some. Kevin Owens starts the show after his reveal on Friday as the fifth man for War Games, and he is coming for one man, and it's not Sami Zayn, who he considers a brother. He's coming for Roman Reigns because it's been 2 years since they fought, so he's taking out all of the Bloodline members, so the next time he comes for Reigns, no one will be there to help him. So he was invited to SmackDown Friday, so he has returned the favor, and out come the Brawling Brutes and Drew McIntyre, which was interesting. They're coming from the crowd because they're the outsiders' way, yet came out to their music, so they had some coordination here with the production team.
I don't know if it was just like sort of the baby face thing to do, you know, to have these guys show up through the crowd.
Maybe Kevin Owens just couldn't swing them a dressing room. But he got them tickets. He got them comps.
That's never happened necessarily in the past. You know, if you're invited, you're invited.
So it's going to be Drew and Sheamus against the Usos on Friday in the advantage match. And then they all cut promos. The Judgment Day interrupt them. And Rhea says that they run this show. Dominic takes the microphone. Yeah, show some respect for the Judgment Day and go back to SmackDown and tell my deadbeat dad I said hello. Balor calls them all clowns, and it leads to Sheamus stating that he doesn't respect Finn Balor. Even though they only live 10 miles apart in Ireland, he thinks that Balor is a plastic patty. And then Balor, the gloves were off. He says, Sheamus, even salt looks like sugar, and I'm one salty Irish bastard, which was a hell of a coincidence because Wei got so mad over the weekend. He said this exact line to me.
Well, you called me a plastic patty, so you had it coming.
But then you threw a salt shaker at me and said it was sugar, and that was not kind. And Sheamus issues a challenge for a six-man tag, and that is how Raw kicks off. The Brawling Brutes against Balor, Damian Priest, and Big Dom.
You know, for like an opening Raw TV match, I actually like this a lot. They're both factions that have been on the ascent at kind of similar timelines on either brand, and I kind of liked it. It felt like a bit of a special attraction. I also really enjoyed Owens's logic for being in the match here. He's drawing a direct line for a future match with Roman here. And I would say that he at this point feels like he's at a hot enough level as a babyface where I can entertain that conversation and, you know, feel like he actually stands a chance at, well, not beating Roman, but at least like, you know, creating a compelling program.
You've also reestablished that even through all they've been through, that mm-hmm. Owens considers Zayn a brother, and I feel that one of them should be on the verge of just being pummeled. And maybe it's like Owens is the one that Reigns just, we're going to take this guy out. He is not going to be a threat. And Zayn has sympathy for Owens at the end. Like, there is so much you can do with this ending, but I think it should ultimately be one or the other coming to the other's aid or leaving it at least ambiguous of, you know, like Zayn's got his loyalties, but he still regards Owens the same way.
Certainly. Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, maybe they're calling upon Zayn to deliver sort of a death blow and he has hesitations. It establishes the possibility of a future babyface turn and a reunion of sorts with Zayn and Owens. He still sees the good in him and he wants to turn him to the good side. We also kind of set up a Balor versus Sheamus match in the future as well.
So the match features Kevin Owens on commentary, who does not like Kevin Patrick being referred to as KP because it's too close to KO and he's going back to calling him Bert. So they had the advantage on Holland. And then when Dominic gets tagged in, this whole place boos him. And Owens says that he would never turn on. He said he would turn on his brother Zayn, but never on his father, Terry Steen, getting a shout out here on Raw, like Dominic did to Ray. Butch gets chokeslammed on the edge of the apron. They go to break. They come back. They have the heat on Butch for a while. And then Dominic is hiding behind Ripley on the floor as Holland goes after him. Eventually, Holland gets the tag. Sheamus and Dom later are tagged in, and Dom is running away. And he goes to the backstage, but gets stopped by the OC who come out. So he runs back in. Priest then assists Dominic, and Sheamus gets his throat snapped on the top rope. Sheamus delivers the 20 beats onto Dominic's chest and then hits him with the brogue kick. And it's Dominic taking the fall in 14 minutes and 17 seconds as they heat up the baby faces going into War Games.
Somebody has to take the fall. And I think Dominic, you know, he's not necessarily on the level of a Finn Balor who's about to have a match at the pay-per-view, nor Damian Priest, who's kind of the monster of the group. So I think it kind of makes sense. Good opener. You know, it gives mm-hmm. the Brutes some good momentum heading into War Games. Unfortunately, at the expense of the Judgment Day, but the main event was far more important here.
Balor and Priest then attacked, and Luke Gallows got in a head kick on Priest, and then Owen shows up from the commentator's area and hits a stunner onto Finn Balor. And I mean, just the fact that he's in the match, and certainly he can come in late, but it looks like his knee injury that he can work through it. And just the fact he did at least a little bit of physicality here. He wasn't in a match, but obviously I'm sure he's working hurt, but can make his way through it. And the fact he could do a stunner, like, it didn't look like he was having any issue with that in the limited physicality we saw.
Yeah. Somebody like Owens, I imagine, you know, it'll take a lot for him to not make a match like this. All the members of the babyface team had singles matches and Owens did not. So you would assume they're just, you know, being cautious and resting him. But in War Games itself, you know, we'll see how much he's actually capable of. But I think
That's going to be a long match. Like, even if he's in last, like, that's, I'm expecting that match to be 45 minutes or so. Like, it's going to be a lengthy one, I think.
Yeah.
Johnny Gargano is interviewed by Kathy Kelly. He's got a rematch with The Miz tonight, and he says that Dexter is not going to get involved tonight, and therefore Gargano won't get involved next week when Loomis faces The Miz. And there was no Dexter Loomis on the show. But what was on the show was Johnny Gargano's new theme, a remixed version of Rebel Heart. And Twitter didn't enjoy this change way.
Yeah, it was like a male vocal version of the same song, and people loved the original. And anytime you make any sort of change, people are going to complain. I have a feeling this might have had something to do with CFOs. I don't exactly know what happened with that entire relationship, nor like why he was able to use it, you know, for years. Yeah. And for the past, you know, several months, like you figured the time to change it would have been for his first debut, but maybe it took that time to record something like this. But I can't imagine them changing it just because, you know, I don't know, for shits and giggles. I have to imagine there was some reason.
So The Miz comes out and he was injured doing a TikTok video and his hand is all taped up. I think he ran into Swerve.
Maybe.
So he's got a replacement to face Gargano and it's Omos. So Miz goes on commentary and Gargano hits a suicide dive and then Omos catches his pescado, drops him on the apron. Miz yanks Gargano off the apron and then Omos lifts him from the floor. Gargano lands with a knee. Omos misses in the corner and Omos goes down. So Gargano follows with super kicks, climbs up to the top, leaps, and is caught with a choke slam. And Omos pins Johnny Gargano in 306. And this was not a great night for Johnny Gargano all around.
It was not. Yeah. I actually thought that there was a chance that they were going to feed Omos to Gargano as a way for Gargano to rehab after losing to The Miz, which I thought was already embarrassing enough for somebody of, you know, Gargano's supposed stature.
Oh, this was rehab for Omos losing to Strowman.
It really was. You know, this very much felt like the typical Vince style of booking where the giant can never ever beat the smaller man can never ever beat the giant, no matter how technically skilled he is. I thought Gargano really needed something coming off the Miz loss, and to see them do this to him makes me wonder like what Levesque is planning at the end of all this, because I don't see him just discarding Johnny Gargano as like a, you know, mid-tier guy. But at the same time, this style of booking was definitely confusing, because now he's having to crawl out of an even deeper hole than he was in.
Yeah, he's someone that has really spun off. I think that this Miz program was not beneficial for him, and he certainly feels closer to a Mustafa Ali level than where he was that first month when he came back and seemed like they did have higher plans for him. And maybe it's just the idea of, you know, they wait till Ciampa's available to come back, or he's not a featured guy at the moment.
They're you know, seemingly building up to the Loomis victory over the Miz as sort of like maybe Gargano's big revenge. But that if they do that, that certainly would not be enough for Gargano, you know, playing accessory to Dexter Loomis.
They announced Seth Rollins, Austin Theory, and Bobby Lashley for the U.S. title has been added to Survivor Series. So as of now, coming out of Monday, we have 5 matches for the pay-per-view on Saturday, but 2 of those are War Games matches. So it's a satellite interview with Seth Rollins, who notes that he was mauled by Lashley 2 weeks ago, and then it was Theory attacking him at the end of the show last week. And Rollins asked for this match, and this one was weird. It seems that Rollins is in this in-between period where he's still working in like the Messiah character with this babyface turn that he's done. Like, he's doing the cackle here, and
but all those things I would say are kind of adopted as part of his babyface persona now. Like, fans are cheering him regardless of the cackle. If anything, like, some fans will tell you that they love the cackle. The thing that I think really stood out that might be a bit more ambiguous is him bringing up Cody's name.
He did. He called Theory the stupidest person on the face of the earth for jumping him last week, and to call Cody Rhodes to see what happens when you pick a fight with him. It's going to be a war this Saturday. And yeah, I found his in-ring promos during this time, like the audience is with him. This one, to me, it just to me felt just kind of disjointed. It just felt like the two versions of Seth Rollins that I just didn't like this as like a babyface promo, because I think he's holding on to certain things that
well, to me, that like he's been doing the cackle this entire time, you know, even as a full on babyface over the past couple weeks. So I don't think that seemed too out of place for me. Like, the only thing that really kind of stood out was the Cody thing. And that tells me that Cody's return is imminent, and that they're probably going to go back to a Cody versus Seth program, at least to start.
Theory has his own promo saying no one understands him. Hitting rock bottom was the best thing for him. He's not the same kid. He's a new man, and anyone that steps up will be sent home. And he warns Seth Rollins, Lashley, and throws in Dolph Ziggler for good measure. I think Ziggler got the message. He's not going to step up to
him. Why doesn't he get a U.S. title shot?
Because he's been forgotten.
Okay.
And he beat Ziggler, so he's out of the running. He's not in the rankings. But who is in his crosshairs is Mustafa Ali. So they had a singles match. Ali looked great in this match, but unfortunately, he's kind of in Johnny Gargano land. He had taped up ribs, so he was selling the ribs throughout this match. And Theory rolls into a super kick, but then places Ali in the Tree of Woe. He's kicking at the ribs, but then Ali hits a sunset bomb. And then I just wrote down, great selling of the ribs. And then with that, he climbs to the top and he hits a 450 splash that he ends up missing. And they said that probably did more harm than good. I guess he was going for broke here. And then Theory ends up hitting A-Town down and pins Ali in 545. Ali is just the punching bag on both shows. And that's a unique distinction for Mustafa Ali. He is getting killed on both shows every week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he lost the Ricochet on Friday. Of course, he was a substitute for Rey Mysterio. Their justification is that the beatdown from Bobby Lashley last week prevented him from losing that, from winning that match. And, you know, he came out taped ribs here. And so it played a role here, too. It's their way of, I guess, somewhat protecting the guy. But man,
tremendous protection. This guy has been untouchable.
Yeah, this, too, was just like, I don't know if he's on his way out or something, but like they're really making a point to tell you that, you know, Mustafa Ali right now is just getting beaten down a lot. So, I mean, they could be doing all of this to kind of, you know, tell a further story with him having had enough and somehow, you know, using it to transform. But
maybe he'll quit and then he's brought. Oh, we already did that. He was already brought back.
Yeah. I don't exactly know. This could be just, you know, his continued descent into obscurity, or they could be using it for fuel for a further story. But the story they were making sure that you knew about Mustafa Ali was that he's somebody who's going to get beaten up a lot.
Lashley comes out and tells Theory that you couldn't even get the job done when I left the scraps of Seth Rollins for you. And Theory is blaming Lashley for losing and says how Brock Lesnar kicked your ass, Lashley, and then Rollins beat you for that title, and then you lost again to Lesnar at Crown Jewel. Well, Theory is going to leave Survivor Series as a two-time champion. They get into it, and then Theory attacks him with a chair. Lashley no-sells it, so Theory runs away and is chased to the back. And as he runs backstage, he bumps into Ali and throws Ali at Lashley. So poor Ali gets the shit kicked out of him again by Lashley. This poor guy. And he ends up in the Hurt Lock. I mean, my God, I would have loved to have been the person who Ali shows up at the arena. It's like, what do you guys have planned for me tonight? All right, sit down, Mustafa. We're going to have you in this match. You're going to get beaten like a drum. But then you're going to go backstage, but don't go too far, because then we're going to have Bobby Lashley annihilate you further. So that there's nothing left of you by the end of this show. That's the plan.
Yeah, like after seeing something like this, I mean, if there's any sort of like reason for him to get any a push coming off of this, I don't know what they could possibly do, because
you literally could have had a job guy in this role, like just that's just hanging out backstage that they're saying is ready for the next match, and he gets thrown to the wolves. Like, I know they had the Lashley Ali, I'm sure they're going to do that match again, but goddamn, this did nothing for Ali. Just seemed like, man. I don't know. I guess that's kind of his role.
That was like the intended effect, you know. He was almost like just a punchline here. Isn't it funny? He just like, there's Ali who just got beaten up three matches in a row, essentially over the past 2 weeks, and we're going to just toss him to Bobby Lashley to get beaten up again.
Chad Gable and Otis against Elias and Matt Riddle. And they're really trying to push Elias and Matt Riddle as like, man, this thing is really taking off. I don't know if it is.
Not to you and I, at the very least.
Do you think it's getting popular, these two together?
It's hard for me to gauge, because like, I don't know if I necessarily felt that way about, you know, Gable and Riddle either. And you know, people are kind of talking about them as if it was like a legendary tag team.
Orton and Riddle, you mean?
Or sorry, yes.
Alpha Academy take Riddle to their corner, and Gable hit this nasty dragon screw onto Riddle out of the corner. And then Gable hits a German to Riddle on the edge of the apron. They went through two commercial breaks here. Gable and Otis hit a Steinerizer on Riddle, and then an Otis bomb misses, and the hot tag is made to Elias. And he's in. He hits a neck breaker and a spine buster. Otis then lands an inverted DDT, followed by the diving headbutt by Gable, and gets broken up by a Broton. Floating Bro is hit to both on the floor, and then Riddle lands on his feet from the American Automatic and hits a Floating Bro after a suplex from Elias, and Riddle pins Gable in 1557. Riddle and Gable just continue to have terrific chemistry together. I just don't think that Riddle and Elias is a team that the audience is all that into, but it was a finely worked match and limited to Elias's hot tag here, and Riddle got to shine for most of it, but his stock has certainly deteriorated over these last 2 months. Like, he has come down a peg or two.
I would say the both of them, you know, Elias as well, coming off of the Ezekiel run. I get the sense like this is their way of trying to rebuild the both of them in a tag team setting. And
this has not enhanced Elias, this rebranding. This has taken him back to what the whole problem was.
Yeah. So I'm certainly not much of a fan of like what they've been trying to sell with the bongos and whatnot. But in ring, I was actually impressed here.
The match was good. Yeah,
they're trying to maybe get over just through in ring ability. When you're talking about Elias, it's not necessarily something you would imagine. But Riddle is fantastic. Gable is fantastic, and Elias seems to be at least employing some of the faster paced babyface style that he was using as Ezekiel in this match. And I thought it was actually a very enjoyable match.
JBL and Baron Corbin are at the poker table insulting Albany when Drew McIntyre walks in. So JBL makes a joke about Scotland not being in the World Cup, and a challenge is made to Corbin, and Drew says he respects his elders in reference to JBL, but not Baron. So he punches him in the face.
Yeah.
Those are fire way to set up a match.
A poker game tends to break into a fight occasionally.
There was a feature on War Games with promos from the babyface side, and that took us to Baron Corbin against Drew McIntyre for 17 minutes and 48 seconds to kick off hour number three. This was the 180 version of Will Ospreay and Shota Umino, where I looked down at my watch at the end of this and thought, the show's over. That was an hour. This was so long.
A very long time.
Corbin was working this like, this is my classic match. And dude, this just never ended. Corbin runs Drew into the post, and he takes over, and it is just on and on and on. He's hit with a Glasgow kiss, but then he takes him down with a lariat. Drew fights back, misses with the claymore, then Corbin lifts him up for a big Samoan drop, which elicits chants of "you can't wrestle" on the floor. Drew catches him with a belly to belly on the floor, and then JBL interrupts a claymore attempt, so Drew is caught with the deep six, and then Akira Tozawa appears on the desk, leaps into JBL's arms, and takes his cowboy hat and runs away. This is so distracting for Baron Corbin that he cannot turn to look at Drew. And when he finally does, he is hit with the claymore. 17 minutes and 48 seconds. That is a number I should never say after Baron Corbin. This was so long. This totally sucked my energy out of this show in the third hour. And the rest of this showway was a... let's just get to the finish.
I was watching like on delay, so the commercials were kind of taken away from me. So thankfully, like, I probably had a better experience than you did. But watching in real time, I can certainly understand your complaint. But I think in ring, actually, these two have like good chemistry. You know, they delivered, I thought, a pretty like hard hitting WWE style match here. A lot of activity. I would also say that I think Baron Corbin has like demonstrated enough that I don't know if he's deserving of a "you can't wrestle" chant anymore. You know, I'm not noticing as much of like, you know, sort of like the chin lock WWE style in a lot of the matches that I think we used to see, especially with somebody like Corbin.
Yeah, I to me, like maybe that's fair. I also don't think he is at a level either where I just don't see him in this upper mix, and certainly not deserving of like 18 minutes on television. To me, that's just way too long for him. I have always said, I think this guy has a role on the show, but I think once you go too high with this guy, I think that's when the pushback occurs. And whatever improvements have been made, this audience didn't seem to detect it. And I just felt it was way too long of a match for me. So that was that. Kelly is with the OC. And Styles notes how close he was with Finn Balor, but this is my family. These are my brothers, and this is my sister. His sister of 2 weeks, way, Meechan. And Meechan is just standing here at her brother's side, and Balor walks in and warns, what happens when you dance with the devil? So they get into a big brawl with the Judgment Day, and they go outside, and someone's car gets used as a weapon here. So this was our setup for AJ and Finn Balor. But these are his brothers and his sister, Wei.
Yeah, she's officially Meechan now.
Couldn't she be Mia Styles or
Well, they're siblings by
what? Know. By what? What's their history together? They never crossed paths in TNA.
I don't know, dude. Maybe they have some secret oaths to join the club, and once you're in, you're in.
Alcohol. That brought them all together.
That's it.
Bianca comes out with Asuka and Alexa Bliss, and they note that no Meechan, but Meechan will be ready for War Games. And as much as they're pushing this name, there were still references to Mia Yim on this show. But on the roster page, they are calling her Meechan. That's how she's identified. So I don't know if it's like a slow transition where they're going to slowly get rid of Mia Yim, but we still had both tonight as we did last week.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't blame the announcers for like forgetting that she's supposed to be called Meechan after like calling her Mia Yim probably for her entire career. So I imagine it's some sort of weird slow transition where maybe a month from now she's strictly Meechan. I can only imagine a name change like this is for like branding purposes, you know.
I guess so. Yes,
like owner, like IP ownership. I mean.
So they cut their promos. Bliss is going to toss Nikki in the trash where she belongs. I hope she has more success throwing Nikki into the trash than Nikki did with the belt. And then they will decide on Friday who their fifth member will be, and you will not be disappointed.
Unfortunately, Albany was, because they started to boo when they realized they weren't going to get that announcement tonight.
So they're going to reveal it on Friday, and I would think that the what are you expecting, Wei?
You know, there are actually quite a few candidates. Obviously, either a Naomi or a Sasha. It could also be Beth Phoenix with Rhea Ripley on the other side. Charlotte is a possibility. Becky is a possibility.
Yeah, I would say like this probably shuts down the Sasha Naomi expectation. I think if you're announcing it the night prior, I think it is you don't want that disappointment on Saturday night of revealing a mystery person. So that looks to be
So you're saying if they don't announce it,
I would think if you had Sasha coming, I think that's the surprise on Saturday night. And I think if you go into Saturday with a surprise, that's what the audience is expecting. And no matter who comes out, it's a disappointment because it's not Sasha.
Possibly.
Damage Control and Rhea Ripley come out, and this leads to the match between the two. They go back and forth here before the match begins, and this is for the advantage. So Ripley is on top with strikes, and she is yelling at the crowd, attacks the kidneys of Asuka, and then Asuka gets on the ankle lock, is going for the knee, but then gets lifted and slammed as Rhea breaks free. Asuka then pulls Ripley off the top, sliding knee is delivered, and she misses the hip attack, eats a kick from Ripley, and then Damage Control appears just like out of nowhere. They're just all of a sudden ringside. We never see them come from the crowd or from the... They're just there out of nowhere. So they can teleport. The Riptide gets countered. She goes for the Asuka lock, and then Belair and Bliss come down to counteract Damage Control, and Asuka misses with the kick, and gets nailed with the Riptide as Ripley wins in 16 minutes and 21 seconds. This match was actually fine. It's just, to me, it was following that last match, I just found this to be a very long third hour overall. And I think the audience felt that. They felt fatigued. So I thought this brought this down. But there was some good stuff here in this match between the two.
Yeah, I like these two a lot in ring together. I in particular like the transitions into their respective submissions. I was always really impressed by, but you could definitely tell the crowd was either a bit tired or they didn't care so much about this match nor the advantage stipulation here. I do love the fact that like you had Rhea Ripley be given a clean win here with so many bodies ringside. I thought for sure we were going to get something with interference, but they had Rhea beat Asuka clean, and Asuka is somebody who I think is relatively well protected. But Rhea, during her time away from the women's division, I mean, she's kind of had like this mystique built around her, and I think they did a good job of retaining that by showing that she's capable of beating somebody like Asuka clean.
Is Asuka done now?
What do you mean?
I mean, she lost clean. She wasn't protected. I mean, I watch a show and I get the impression if this happens, your career's over.
I get the sense she'll be okay.
I think she's exactly the same. Hmm. It's amazing. You can do this.
Yeah.
So the women get into a big brawl, including Meechan running down. And then Asuka hits a high cross to everyone on the floor. And that was obviously the big spot. We still had 2 minutes of this show left, and they had nothing. They had no more physicality. They had no more interactions. So Corey Graves and Kevin Patrick had to just crawl to the finish of this show together. So we run through the whole card. We reiterate the fact that the mystery member is coming on Friday. We also, I hope this is her new nickname that Kevin Patrick bestowed upon Shotzi, the ballsy badass. And then they still have time left. So we replay the whole like ending of like the highlights of the match and then the post match. So for the first time I can ever remember, the closing image of Raw was on the replay. That's how the show ended. The replay screen was off and that's how the show ended. So they just had to pad the shit out of these last 2 minutes. It was the longest 2 minutes if you go back and watch this, because they just had to. It's like, we don't even have a long paper. There's only five matches for us to plug on this pay-per-view. I mean, Excalibur would have been no problem. Just give me a week's worth of matches. I need more than 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, did they miss something in the match? Was the match mistimed?
Like they ended early, and this never happens in a WWE. I mean, the occasional time you've had some padding at the end, but I mean, not a huge thing, but. It was notable if you were watching it live. There you have it. SmackDown is Friday with the advantage match and the mystery partner revealed. And then Saturday is Survivor Series. So did this get you amped for Saturday, Way? It's the intended purpose of the show.
Did it get me amped for it? I mean, I would say I was already pretty hyped amped. Up for it. You know, just because like it's War Games, and I love the match concept and the visual of it. So honestly, that alone had me amped enough. All they really needed to do, I think, was establish a bit of story with the babyface team, and I thought they did a good job of that here with Kevin Owens and the Brawling Brutes and Drew, kind of like, you know, getting good presence all over the show. On the women's side of things, it seems to be a whole. You know, match driven by who this mystery fifth member is, and you know, I'm sure it'll be good with the amount of talent that's in there. The rest of the card, I mean, thankfully, it's they're not looking to pad this thing out. It's being kept pretty lean, and I think for good reason. AJ versus Balor, I think, is going to be AJ versus Balor is probably going to be hopefully pretty good. What else here? Shotzi Ronda. I'm maybe not expecting a whole lot here. By the way, people are saying Ballsy Badass was her nickname on the Independent. So she, you can't blame WWE for that one.
It's a bad nickname across the board.
Yeah. And then we've got what's the other match here? The three way with Rollins,
the US title.
Lashley and Theory. Yeah. I mean, I can kind of take it or leave it, but that's. We'll see who comes out of that one, like with sort of a changed character.
So if the fifth person turns out to be Becky Lynch, do you think that that will be that's big enough that you don't have a Sasha, that's a big return and that will be received as such? I think that's the reveal on Friday and you're doing it the night before, I'd be a little nervous of doing that in Boston on the Saturday night if you did the mystery gimmick. Becky maybe could overcome that anyway because it's a return, but I would say I would still not want to risk the We Want Sasha chance that a lot of that audience would be hoping for, even if it's like you're dangling that by doing the mystery thing. So I think having the Friday reveal is, and it'll probably do a decent number teasing a surprise. Like those tend to, hook people. All right. That was Monday's edition of Raw. We will now go to super chats and some feedback before we call it a night.
Let's first of all go to our super chats, starting with here. Heriberto Perez, who sends $5. Thank you so much for the support, Heriberto. He says, thanks for the great content, guys. What is y'all's interest level in Wrestle Kingdom as opposed to the last one?
Well, we only have three matches, and it is already... I mean, listen, there were some very good matches on this last year's show. I really like the move back to one night this year. I think that is... The unfortunate part is there is going to be a lot less time for some matches, and there are going to be like an Ishii is probably going to be buried in some match instead of getting a big prominent spot. There are compromises to having one night instead of two, but I think on the whole, given where New Japan's business is, I think this is a positive move. And based on these three matches, pretty high at this point, 2 months out or less than that now.
Yeah, honestly, for me, it's more so just about the two matches that were announced over the past weekend. You know, they both feel like, at least in terms of name value, special attraction additions to a Wrestle Kingdom that we're not used to seeing.
You'll also have a lot of Inoki stuff on this show that they're dedicating the show to. Like, I hope throughout the show there's classic clips between the matches. Like Inoki is going to be the theme of the entire event, so that could be very cool too.
Also on the card is Zack Sabre Jr. versus Ren Narita for the
That's right. We have the four way. Yeah, I was Zack Sabre Jr. and Ren Narita is going to be excellent. The four way is, I can't see that disappointing. Like this is a really strong card already with just the five matches.
Is it still a 15-minute time limit for the TV title?
Yes.
Okay, so I mean, unfortunately, that's a match where I feel like I would love it if it was a bit longer than that. But 15 minutes, a little cheap, plenty between those two. So I'm looking forward to that as well. That feels fresh. We'll see what else they announce.
Mm-hmm. You'll have the winners of the tag leagues that are just started today as well.
Any other AEW contribution you feel?
I think everyone expects FTR to defend the tag titles on that show.
Right. Right.
Whether it's Aussie Open or I would say Aussie Open and Naito Sonata would be your favorites in the tag league. If that's your Naito position on the card.
And what's the status of audience clapping for this show?
I think you still have the restrictions, I think.
Because it's like, still like, 50% limit, right? For people for clap.
Yeah, I don't know the specifics on the Tokyo Dome of right. what exactly the number is, but
okay.
Because that seemed to be the discussion of like a lot of people going to the Tokyo Dome is still having that limitation.
We have one more super chat from Hanzi who says, "How do you guys feel about Overdrive post main event angle?"
I haven't seen Overdrive yet. I did catch up on quite a lot on Sunday night, but I did not see that. But for those that missed it, Josh Alexander retained the Impact title against Frankie Kazarian. It sounded like it was a terrific match. And then Bully Ray cashed in his Call Your Shot gauntlet. And that's going to be the Hard to Kill main event, which is their next pay-per-view in January. That they have been doing this story ever since Bound for Glory, of Bully Ray coming in, winning the Call Your Shot, and everyone warning Josh Alexander that you can't trust Bully Ray. And Bully is coming in trying to redeem his reputation, that he's going to be a stand-up guy and do this face-to-face. And everyone's warning him that he's going to screw you. And Bully stating that he's not, that he'll do it to his face. So that's how they set it up, with him calling his shot, but in January. So Josh Alexander has plenty of time to prepare for Bully Ray.
Cool. All right, let's go to forum.postwrestling.com for the rest of your feedback from our Post Wrestling Cafe patrons. John, would you like to start off?
Okay, Benjamin writes, my favorite part of the show was Finn Balor upselling Dominic Mysterio's deadbeat dad line. That Baron Corbin-Drew McIntyre match was awful. Aside from them ripping off Don Callis' wrestling god line about Kenny Omega, the JBL and Corbin pairing isn't really doing much for me. Rhea and Asuka were pretty stiff with each other. The promo before the match wasn't my favorite. Graves even called Bliss out for being disinterested, which after 3+ months of this, I can't blame her. Raquel Gonzalez, Liv Morgan, the fifth woman for the War Games match, it isn't exactly a surprise. More paint by numbers.
I'd like to ask Benjamin who he thinks it is.
Well, I think today everyone
I don't think it'll be Raquel or Liv.
No, he might be sarcastic out there.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. I mean, also, Wrestling God is a JBL thing.
Yeah, and has been, you know, since his title run.
Okay. Well, Click actually was just about to say that. Okay. And then this is just a conversation about JBL. So that was the only piece of feedback we had today. Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, that concludes tonight's Rewind to Raw. A reminder, Tuesday, postwrestlingcafe.com, we will be dropping the new Rewind Away covering NWA TNA December 11th, 2002. You can leave feedback up on the forum. That will be dropping tomorrow night. Jeff Jarrett versus Kurt Hennig, BG James versus Ron Killings, Amazing Red against AJ Styles. I mean, what a collection. This is the infancy way of sports entertainment extreme sex as concocted by Vince Russo. And boy, do we have some news items for everybody. We're going to talk about the WWA pay-per-view featuring Sting and Lex Luger. We're going to talk about a writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution getting to sit in on the WWE writing team and chat with Vince McMahon. And we'll talk about Paul Heyman appearing on TSN's Off the Record. So that's all going to be on Rewind Away on Tuesday night.
The event is available on Impact Plus. So I believe...
You have to do... Search for it on Google, okay? Because inside Impact Plus, this was a very... I could not find this show in Impact Plus. I literally had to Google it for the direct link and then get it. But once you see that image of AJ Styles looking very 2002 with Mortimer Plumtree, then you've come to the right place. That is the image you want to get.
All right. Excellent.
I wonder what his sister thought of this look in 2002.
Meechin, you mean?
Meechin.
I don't know.
All right. That's it for us, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks to everyone that joined us over the weekend, and we will speak with you on Tuesday night.